Welcome to Fitness Disrupted, a production of iHeartRadio. I am Tom Holland, and this is Fitness Disrupted. Does spinning or indoor cycling make your legs big? I couldn't sleep last night because of this topic. And I found that hard to believe as I'm tossing and turning in bed because of something I read from a fitness person, which I will read to you shortly, about indoor cycling. And it's such a load of garbage. If I were to be someone who swore on this show, I would drop so many expletives. I literally couldn't sleep. And I've been in this industry a long time, and I really try to not let things get to me. But it's how much I care about my job and about the truth and about the science behind exercise. And at 4 a.m., I was grabbing my phone next to the bed, which it shouldn't be, I know, writing down notes for this show. And I woke up about a half hour later. You know, I get up early to begin with and got to work. And again, I've talked about this topic when the bulk myth came up and comes up. But I have to do it again. I have to do it again. And I know that not everyone listens to all the shows especially, so does spinning make your legs big? Now, I started teaching indoor cycling in the 90s and taught for decades and loved it. Loved it. I miss it. And, you know, did it way back when I was just starting triathlon. And then I actually went around for New York sports clubs and taught content, taught the instructors, you know, and now I'm actually currently a fitness expert in a lawsuit that involves indoor cycling. So I have a little bit of experience and a huge passion for it, obviously. Again, I'm annoyed that I was annoyed enough to stay up and toss and turn last night. So my lack of sleep is hopefully to your benefit. And this myth has been around forever. What I find interesting, I'm just going to take you through a quick history, right? So the myth was there back when I was teaching spin in the 90s. And spin, by the way, that Johnny G created spinning. Spinning is a trademark term. Johnny G was a cyclist. There's a race across America, a cycling event, and he created spinning as a way to train for that. That's where it came from. So it was cyclists. And along the way, it, like so many other things in fitness, got watered down, got just screwed up. We'll leave it at that, screwed up. All right, so we're going to bring the science back. So for many years, I had clients say to me, if I was a personal, you know, their personal trainer and said, hey, you should take my spin class. No, I can't do that. Makes your legs huge. Makes your legs huge. Right, so that myth on and on and on. Then SoulCycle and a couple of the other boutique fitness centers opened. And some of those people who believe that myth suddenly were going. It was expensive. It was trendy. It was fun. And to their credit, the people who started SoulCycle helped, and all the other ones, Flywheel, and I guess there's hundreds now, got many of those people in the door who believed that myth, but not everyone. Still, the myth persisted, and it still persists to this day, but less so, because now we have Peloton. Peloton, and then everyone who followed suit after that, suddenly, as I say, it seems that if you spin in the privacy of your own home on an expensive bike, your legs don't get big. That seems to be the takeaway. If you do it at home, oh, then suddenly your legs aren't big. But if you do it in a group setting at a gym, then there's some kind of, you know, unique musculoskeletal thing that happens and your legs get huge. Obviously not true. Being sarcastic. But it's a huge disservice, and I have to do this show. And let me just get right to the fitness person's online post about cycling. This person doesn't need to be named, and I'll just read it to you. So this is a post. This is a fitness person, many followers, many, many followers, and I will leave it at that. A fitness person posting about indoor cycling. My mentor, Charles Poliquin, the single greatest strength coach of all time, hates spin classes. He states that spin classes are a complete waste of time, counterproductive at best. If you want fat legs, keep spinning. Wow. Now, this is touchy, but I'm going to go there. Charles Poliquin died at 57. Charles Poliquin was an extreme fitness person. Amazing, trained hockey players, but died at 57. That's it. That's all I'm going to say. I want to say more, and maybe in another show I will, but died at 57. Okay? And this person went on to say, he has his scientific reasons. I'm reading verbatim. So why is spinning so useless? Because the high velocities fatigue a particular point in the neuromuscular junction, which is responsible for the rapid firing rate of the motor units, you perceive great fatigue even though little work has been done. That's verbatim. Let's just pull apart a little of that. There could be so much, but just a little. So if little work has been done, how are your legs getting huge? Can't be. We've talked about the overload principle. To change a muscle, you need to challenge it. So if little work has to be done, then you're not getting huge legs. But that's not what this person's arguing, right? So let's go on. You could reproduce the same type of fatigue in your triceps if I asked you to hold a pair of fly swatters and swat an imaginary 100 flies in 30 seconds. Would your triceps get tired? Sure. Would they improve significantly in terms of conditioning? No. Why? Because the resistance is not high enough to elicit the hormonal response needed to create adaptive response that would bring about positive body composition changes. Now, I agree in that you need to challenge, as I just said, your muscles to change them. So this argument actually supports my theory. I'm sorry, it's not a theory. My position. I want to be careful with my wording. That your legs don't get huge from spinning. And I'm going to give you studies and all that kind of stuff. But I need to read this because this person goes on. It doesn't end here. So yes, supporting my position, but as so often happens, they go too far. In spinning exercise, the body adapts by storing both intramuscular and subcutaneous fat in the thigh and hip areas to provide a more readily available source of fuel for the aerobic recovery periods. The body figures out if I store fat there, it reduces the time to get to the muscles to provide the energy source. Result? Cellulite. No. I'm not even going to get into the actual description of what cellulite is. But my point in reading this is, it sounds really smart. It sounds really smart. And there were so many comments after this post thanking the and that's one of the reasons I went nuts. Thank you. These people were saying, thank you for this really intellectually stimulating and supporting evidence to why I'm not going to ride a bike. This is where, without even going into the science, which I will, I mean, you got to be kidding me. You got to be kidding me. So then we shouldn't run, right? Because if given that logic, let me just change the term for the final paragraph. In running, the body adapts by storing both intramuscular and subcutaneous. So what does it matter? And if we do push-ups, then wouldn't the body store the fat in those places? I agree. The body's a really smart machine and it has certain adaptations to make us go longer and farther. This is garbage. Garbage that sounds really, you know, intellectually correct, which it is not. It is not. Let me just simply say, again, you are pedaling a bike. You are burning calories. You're burning calories. You know, what's the difference? This person I know happens to be a rower, you know, for part of the cardio. So why wouldn't your arms get fat? It's just garbage. And you know what this goes to, by the way? This goes to the five components of fitness. This goes to something I really have to just point out. And one thing I will never do, I don't bash anyone else's form of exercise. And this is not only bashing it, it's trying to tell you it's incorrect. Incorrect. So, and I would also ask this person, so what's the difference between riding inside and outside? Because there's a lot of really skinny guys in the Tour de France. Not a perfect analogy, but it works. It works. So I have a problem with this on so many levels, but the fact that it sounds scientific and the fact that so many people are believing it and reading it and taking it to heart. And to give you the extreme example, and I will use her name because she's a celebrity and she is out there and pushing this all the time, Tracy Anderson. And this article is a couple years old, but it was in the Daily Mail, which is possibly, you know, it's the National Enquirer for all intents and purposes, you know, over the pond. And pretty much every single thing. Now, again, it's the National Enquirer, but it's out there and it's popular. And almost every article I read about fitness is exactly the opposite, is garbage as well. And here's the headline: Spinning Bulks Your Thighs. Tracy Anderson on how the trendy workout could actually make you gain weight. Now I'm reading verbatim. All right. Tracy Anderson in Red Book magazine states that spinning may burn calories in the short term, but if that's all you're doing, it'll bulk your thighs and can actually make you gain weight. This line I love, by the way. The petite blonde who counts Gwyneth Paltrow as a close friend. Like that's that, by the way, is how she made it. I'm not going to go into the whole Tracy Anderson debacle, but instead of saying the petite blonde who has a PhD in, you know, exercise physiology, no, because she has nothing as far as I know, as far as education. But no, that's why you should listen to her. The petite blonde who counts Gwyneth Paltrow as a close friend. And I go on, added that the idea that spinning is a fast track to slimming down is a common misconception. I have women who come into my office after spinning exclusively for 6 months, wondering why they can't fit into their jeans, she said. There you go. She has made a career off of the bulk myth. Such a disservice to all you women out there and men as well who are going to be confused as to the exercise science behind all this. Ridiculous. Fear of bulk. All right, I'm way over when I normally take a break. That's the longest I've ever gone because this drives me up the wall. All right. Quick break. We'll be right back. All right, I composed myself somewhat, but give me about a minute and I'll be back to where I was pre-break. I'm talking about the spinning and the myth about bulk. And I am really surprised that this kept me up last night, but I want you to know that. Because that's how much I care. And that's how much bad information tortures me. Tortures me. Because we are not selling shoes in the fitness industry. We are selling health and wellness. And you're investing time and money into your health. And that's why I find it a personal affront, this kind of information and misinformation. It offends me deeply enough that I can't sleep. All right, I'm going to give you a quick tutorial because I don't want to bore you with it. But what is a spin bike? What are we talking about here? Why is the potential for this myth to even be around? Well, the spin bike is about the wheel, right? It's resistance on the wheel. And really quickly, there are three basic ways you can have that resistance. I'm going to start with the wind fan, right? The Airdyne type bike, the one you see, it's been around forever. CrossFit gyms use it. You have the arms as well, the handles. And basically, the resistance is created by big fans in that wheel. And you feel the air on you. And what's really cool about it is the harder you push, the harder it is. So it calibrates itself to your fitness level. You see these on the sidelines of NFL games where the players are going to stay warm in between plays. And it's awesome because it is a full body workout in that you are using your arms, but it's unique in that the resistance is air displacement. Okay. And then the older school ones, it was physical resistance, direct contact resistance. And these were back in the day, it's the principle of friction. You know, you're using things like pads that are rubbing against the wheel to slow it down. Okay. What is the problem with that? Lots of mechanical issues. They wear out. You're going to have to replace the pads. And they're noisy, as is the Airdyne type bike as well. So, you know, you're talking physical resistance, pressing against the wheel, something like a pad. And, you know, they make noise and they wear out. So what's the newest type of resistance? Magnetic. Okay. Magnetic bikes have advantages over what I just said because they don't have the parts to wear and tear, no friction involved. They use electromagnetic induction to provide the resistance. They are smooth, continuous resistance, and you can change the resistance really simply, touch of a button, turning a dial, and they are quiet. Holy smokes, like the newest bikes, you get on those, if you have a baby sleeping or you're in an apartment building, super quiet. So there's resistance. Three different ways. Why is that important? Well, it is, because when we're talking about building bulk, this is important. And the final thing you need to know about the bike is the wheels are generally weighted. And what's amazing is there's a bike where the wheel is 8 pounds. That is really light as far as an indoor cycling bike is concerned. Generally, they're around 30 pounds, though. And the heaviest I've read about, seen, I haven't tried it, 66 pounds. And those are generally the less expensive bikes that put the weight into the wheel, but there's weight. Why is that important? Because it takes momentum, takes effort to get it started, that wheel, right? Depending on how heavy it is, but then it's going to keep moving. It's going to store energy. So why is that important? When spinning first got really popular, and it still is at certain boutiques, this technique of go really light resistance and super fast RPMs. And that's what, in my experience, most people are doing, a large majority. It's changing over time. Why? Because it's easier. And the instructors often push that super fast. So you're not using that much muscle tissue. The wheel is doing a significant amount of the work. And that is important. It's fun for many people. It's also potentially dangerous because that wheel is moving and you have to stop it. And that goes to certain lawsuits. I'll leave it at that. But there's a weight in that wheel. It's weighted. You're getting it started and then it's doing a lot of the work after that. So you can go super fast without doing a lot of work and letting the wheel itself do a lot of the work. That's important. So why is it? Because to create a stimulus, to get your legs to get bigger, you need to have a significant resistance. And that's just not found in biking, in indoor cycling, I should say. Of course, it's how you use it. In other words, you can put a heck of a lot of resistance on and go at slow cadences. Cadence is how fast that wheel moves, RPMs, revolution per minute. That is not how most people are doing it. And even if you are, it's not like squatting your body weight or squatting, you know, your body weight on a barbell. Yes, it's resistance, but it is not a significant enough stimulus to create huge legs, especially if you're doing it once, twice, three times a week for an hour even. And most people now, the classes are shorter. It's not the resistance necessary to get your legs big. So this is where Tracy Anderson and all the people out there who are pushing the bulk myth failed to take exercise physiology 101, the overload principle. Ain't there, people. Ain't there. And you know what? Found a great quote. She was one of my first guests and a friend of mine, Michelle Olson, PhD. We've both been quoted in numerous articles about this, and I love one of her quotes as far as bulk myth. And we talked about that, actually. Listen to the show I did with her way back, start of this podcast. This came up, and here's a quote from her. You have two types of muscle fibers. One are endurance fibers. One type are endurance fibers. When you do aerobic exercise like spinning, you use these fibers, she says. These fibers can become more fatigue resistant from doing activities like spinning and running. In other words, it feels easier to do the same workout, but they do not bulk. And here's the takeaway. You have to lift, this is what she's saying, quoting her, you have to lift heavy weights doing multiple sets to cause muscle growth in your power strength fibers, and you don't use these to any appreciable degree during cardio exercise. Just to hit the point one more time with Tracy Anderson, pretty sure She says running gives you huge legs as well, which would be totally contradictory to what PhD professor Michelle Olson just said. All right, one final break. Then we're getting to two studies. Just to show you I'm not just pulling this out of anywhere, although I think the breakdown of the bike should start to teach you about the resistance and what's necessary to get huge. And I'm going to give you some common sense takeaway things too that should put it all into perspective. Final break. We'll be right back. Okay. If this doesn't clarify for you why your legs can't get huge from biking, then let me know. And okay, you're going to have those people who say, but I have a friend who went to spin class 3 times a week, 12 weeks. By the way, I'm going to give you a study that pretty much just that. And she gained weight. Or he gained weight. That happens too. Both sexes, we got to control for what you eat, people. So topic for another day, talked about it several times, compensatory eating. And let's go there. Let's go to some simple math, by the way. And yes, quite often these bikes completely overestimate your caloric expenditure during class. Generally speaking, 600, 700 calories per hour. I know you're seeing numbers that are much higher. I know you are. So let me give you I'm not going to give you for round numbers. We're going to stick with 700. Let's say 700. I'll say 45 minutes. Most people aren't even, you know, biking for an hour indoors anymore. Nor do you have to if you're working hard. It's about quality, not quantity. But let's say 700 in 45 minutes. And you're doing that 3 times a week. 700 times 3 is 2,100. So calories, you are 1,400, two workouts, essentially under burning a pound per week. So if you spin 3 times a week and you go to your favorite coffee shop and have some treats or one of the calorically dense specialty coffees, you can undo that workout in 5 minutes. And what I love about the two studies is I'm going to talk about, as I always do, that it's not just about weight loss. That's important. And it's a topic of almost every show because that's the focus. But exercise is so much more than that, including indoor cycling and the benefits that I will point out within the studies. Let's just go right to them. Why not? All right. So first study, and the great thing about these two, one is Brazilian and the other one, I think they're both Brazilian, actually. So I'm going to have a tough time pronouncing the journals that they're in. First one, though, the title is Health Benefits of Indoor Cycling, a Systematic Review. So this was a review of the studies out there on indoor cycling and the benefits. This was 2019, August. Medicina, that looks close, is the name of the journal. And going to read right from it. The main finding of the current systematic review was that indoor cycling may be effective for enhancing VO2 max, HDL, that's your good cholesterol, and lean body mass levels, and also for reducing, here we go, body fat, blood pressure, LDLs, that's the bad cholesterol, and triglycerides. So that's what I was just talking about. Yes, we want to lose weight. Yes, we want to be a healthy weight, but cardiovascular exercise, raise your heart rate. I don't care how you do it. Cycling, swimming, biking, walking, elliptical. It's how you do it that matters and how frequently. And that's why I get so annoyed with the stupidity that I read you at the top of the show. Ridiculous. It goes on. So this was basically, they took 13 of the studies for inclusion. Sample size was around 372 people, 306 of them being women. I'm going to read you just one more time. This is their takeaways again. Results revealed that indoor cycling may improve aerobic capacity, blood pressure, lipid profile, and body composition. And they finish up by saying these enhancements may be achieved as standalone intervention or combined with other physical activities or diet. It's awesome. Okay? Get your heart rate up and stop bashing other people's exercise. It's ridiculous. And it's so common now. It drives me nuts. Do what you like to do. If you don't have anything nice to say about exercise, and especially if it's not even correct as far as the science goes, scientifically sound, even though it sounds scientifically sound, that's the worst. And there's a lot of cut and pasting that goes on now, thanks to social media. Ugh. And you know what? I thought of having that person on the show. Do you want that kind of show? I don't want that kind of show, but it may happen soon enough. I may just invite some of those people on and we'll have a little discussion because I know that they're cutting and pasting. I just think it would be really uncomfortable for them. Second study, effect of diet and indoor cycling on body composition and serum lipid. Again, not just body weight. This was a randomized controlled trial. I am going to try to pronounce the journal. Arquivos, I should have my son who's really good at Spanish and just other languages. Arquivos Brasileiros de Cardiologia, 2010, August. Okay, I took Latin. The objective of this one was to assess body composition and lipid profile in overweight women after 12 weeks of low-calorie diet and indoor cycling. 12 weeks, awesome time, right? Pretty much how long most people, hopefully, exercise before they give up and when they're going to start seeing results, I say. So they randomly assigned 40 women into four groups, a control group, an indoor cycling group, an indoor cycling group with a low-calorie diet, and then just a low-calorie diet. And the indoor cycling training was three sessions of 45 minutes each, which is perfect. That's what a lot of people do as far as the frequency and the duration of their indoor cycling. The results, all of them, you know, indoor cycling, cycling with diet and diet significantly reduced body mass, fat percentage and body mass index. They also lowered serum levels of total cholesterol and triglycerides. HD cholesterol, the good one, increased significantly for the indoor cycling group and the indoor cycling with low calorie diet. Conclusion, according to the results, the indoor cycling and the low-calorie diet help fight overweight and control serum lipid levels. I don't see anything going to what Tracy Anderson says. I don't see any studies about the aforementioned ridiculousness about fat storage and the high velocities fatigue, a particular point in the neuromuscular junction, which is responsible for the rapid firing rate. Yeah, wow. That sounds wicked smart. Wicked smart, but no. Let me leave you with this. Let's go to some common sense. And let me leave you with a quote that I have. Let me pitch it towards the end of the show here. Perfect time. The Micro Workout Plan, my newest book. I go into all this, by the way. Everything I talk about on the show is in that book, The Micro Workout Plan. And I have a friend who's a former pro cyclist, woman, amazing cyclist, phenomenal shape. And she's now, I think she's older than I am. Not much, but you know. So I asked her for the book. I said, I'm writing this chapter on bulk myth and all the stuff I've talked about during the show. And I said, what's your take on that? And she used to own a spinning gym. She used to own it with another woman. And this is way back. You know, she was cycling and competing, you know, long before, you know, the Peloton and even SoulCycle was around. And I said, what would you say to those women who would tell you they're going to get huge legs by taking your class and coming to your gym? She said, and I quote, I would just point at my legs and laugh. 5,000 revolutions per hour will not build bulk. That is a simple way of giving you the science. We're talking endurance. We're talking, as you saw and heard in the studies, improving your VO2 max, your aerobic capacity, doing great things for your heart and your blood profile, and yes, your weight. None of the garbage about building muscle. And here's the final takeaway that I think was one of the things I thought of at 3 a.m. this morning, although I think I put it in the book as well, but it came up. Came back to mind. If indoor cycling bulked your legs the way people said it does, and as quickly as people said it does, I once had a woman scream at me telling me that I got her legs bigger by taking the class. Story for another day. If it actually did what it did, bodybuilders would be on bikes all day long. That's common sense, people. That's common sense. And I taught for years, I should have legs the size of tree trunks. I mean, back when I was really teaching, sometimes it was 4, 5, 6 classes a day. I don't know how I did it. I do know how I did it. I was young and there's caffeine and I had to make money. It's garbage. It goes against the science. It goes against the overload principle. How many people are walking around proof positive? You want experiments. And the fact that suddenly everyone's doing it at home, and that myth has gone away to some degree, but it's still there. And this person who posted the garbage about the neuromuscular junction and stuff like that, just annoyed that people aren't doing the exercise that this person likes. Don't bash other people's exercise, especially when you don't know what you're talking about. Enough. I feel better. I feel much better. Thank goodness for this show. I feel much better. All right. Hope you enjoyed that. You know I did. This is my outlet. It's my running and my exercise and my show and writing the books and all that kind of stuff. Because I want you to have your best life. And like I said at the start of the show, I take offense at people who have an audience, and sometimes a large audience, spewing garbage. That's enough. Enough said. If you have not rated the show yet, shame on you. Please do so and subscribe. Subscribe to this show. And if you want to reach out, I love to hear from you. Feedback, topics, all that kind of stuff. Questions. Tom H. Fit is my Twitter. Tom H. Fit is my Instagram. And you go to fitnessdisrupted.com as well. Reach out to me through there. Read up on other stuff right at fitnessdisrupted.com. Remember, we have three things that we control, all of us. How much we move, what we put into our mouths, and our attitudes. And that is awesome. I'm Tom Holland. This is Fitness Disrupted. Believe in yourself. Fitness Disrupted is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.